It's Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferrat. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi recommended that the president postpone his annual State of the Union address in light of the ongoing government shutdown. We'll talk about the move and what it could mean for the relationship between Congress and the White House.
First, there's a growing trend to celebrate what used to be private life events in a very public way. Here's a recent example that made national news.
Video shows how one gunshot started a massive brush fire in Arizona that scorched about 45,000 acres. This happened at a gender reveal party in April of 2017. Here's how it happened. A target was set up with the words boy and girl written on it. Well, moments later, shot goes off. The target explodes into flames, and as blue smoke rises into the air, the dry grass around it immediately caught on fire. Dennis Dickey, a U.S. Border Patrol agent from Tucson, pleaded guilty in September to starting that fire. He was sentenced to 5 years probation and ordered to pay restitution of more than $8 million.
Gender reveal parties aren't always so dramatic or expensive, but they are just one of the many public celebrations that have become common. People have gotten more and more an element of doing it bigger, better, and more creatively now than anyone else. It can be fun and festive. There are also downsides to these events as well.
Aaliyah Wong is a staff member for The Atlantic covering education and families. She wrote a piece called The Over-Celebration of Life Events. Aaliyah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Aaliyah, what are some of the life events that have become public celebrations?
Oh, man, the list could go on. Aside from gender reveal parties, there are post-wedding showers, there are sit-and-see parties, there are pet birthday parties, there are promposals, there are even divorce parties, which was a new one to me, but there's even a store that sells supplies for them, including cake toppers and sashes, the whole shebang.
So what were some of the first types of these kind of events that got this ball rolling?
Yeah, so I think the trend really traces back to the early 2000s when people really started having these lavish weddings, when people were seeing weddings as more than just a simple time to exchange vows and to establish a union. And from there, a kind of additional quote-unquote satellite parties started emerging. And so there was the engagement party, there were the receptions, there were the wedding after parties. And then with regards to things like the gender reveal parties, that really started to take off, I'd say, in the late 2000s, around, say, 2008, when YouTube really got off the ground and people started posting these videos, because the whole premise of gender reveal parties in particular is that they're sensational. They're meant to be really vivid, to have a lot of pomp and circumstance, to really kind of leverage that surprise. And so, you know, as soon as they started being posted on YouTube, the trend really really got off the ground, and the rest was history. Social media has really fueled the popularity of these events.
Yeah, you brought up YouTube and also social media. So I imagine that this has expanded far beyond YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and other platforms. How are people using those to share or overshare the life's events?
Right. So beyond just pictures, a lot of, you know, Instagram, for example, you can post stories, which are ephemeral posts that have videos and can showcase, say, the exploding golf ball, revealing whether it's a boy or girl with blue or pink powder. There are other sort of live streaming tools on these social media platforms. And the fact that millennials are really driving this trend really attests to the role of social media in it. I think people, once they see that others are doing it, there's almost this sense of obligation that, oh, I should do it, because social media provides so much currency for status these days. And there's also this obligation to maybe provide a party for your friends. So all of these factors kind of build up and contribute to this sense that this is something that needs to be done.
Aaliyah Wong is a staff writer for The Atlantic covering education and families. She wrote a piece called The Over-Celebration of Life Events. And we're talking to her about these over-celebrations on social media and the like. Aaliyah, this isn't a totally new phenomenon. I remember a show called Sweet 16 on MTV, mm-hmm. where you had celebrity children, children of celebrities, who would have these lavish 16-year-old parties where they get a musical act to perform, or they would get a Ferrari, and then it seemed like every week there was another family trying to outdo the other, whether it was bar mitzvahs or quinceañeras, other milestone birthdays. What does that say about our tendencies as human beings?
Yeah, I mean, it's very narcissistic. It's very much about ego. It's about one-upping the other person. Today they have catsiñeras, not just quinceañeras. They have bashes for pets to celebrate their birthdays. They have the promposals, and really, like you say, it's about it's a demonstration of how much social currency you have and how much ability you have to really showcase your life.
You know, not surprisingly, now there's also the commercial side of the trend. So you have sites like Pinterest, and a whole bunch of blogs are selling ideas and actual items for instance, gender reveals or promposals or divorce parties and more. Is that just a response to demand, or is that also driving the trend?
I think it is a response, but it's also driving the trend. I think there's this kind of sort of virtuous cycle or vicious cycle, depending on how you look at it, in which the two feed into each other. You know, if you see that these things are being sold, the message is that this is a normal thing to do. And, in the reverse, stores are seeing that there is this trend, and they're saying this is an opportunity that we can exploit. And even when I was speaking with Party City, which now has an entire section devoted to gender reveal parties, they actually have recently had to expand it, so now they have 8 feet of shelving space, I learned, was that they saw that these parties were happening on YouTube and on other platforms, and were like, why aren't we providing the supplies in a single place for these people? So I think it is the two elements kind of feed into each other. So there's very much this capitalistic ingredient.
We have a number of folks who have posted on Facebook about this issue. Gabe said, might as well celebrate. It's later than you think. September Dawn on Facebook said, let people enjoy life and have nice things. Ginger agreed, saying nothing wrong with eating cake and celebrating life. Do you see some positives to publicly celebrating a lot more life events?
Oh, absolutely. If I ever get an invite to one of these, you know, sign me up. I'm going to have some of my own. I know it sounds like I'm a Grinch, but I think, and this is less of a sort of positive aspect and more of a silver lining, I guess you could say, is that one of the kind of ironies of this social media, the role of social media, is that as we're starting to recognize, social media has actually made us feel more disconnected. Everyone is living through their phones, through their computers, and a lot of people feel like it's harder to just hang out with your friends for no other reason than to hang out. And I think that people feel that loneliness and find that an excuse to bring everyone together has to be more than just, oh, you know, I have some free time. It has to be like, I'm having a baby, or my pet is turning to, or, hey, I'm getting divorced, let's get together. So there's almost this this loneliness that is being, I think, addressed with these parties, and I think that is something positive. And I completely agree with the notion that, especially in this era, we should be celebrating life as much as we can, because that's really what life is about. It's about being happy and being around loved ones.
Aaliyah Wong is a staff writer for The Atlantic, covering education and families. She's with us to talk about a piece she wrote called The Over-Celebration of Life Events.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you celebrated one of these many different life events we've heard about more publicly than might have been common 10 or 20 years ago? Did you post it on social media? What made you want to do it? Are you happy you did? On the other side, have you been invited to engagement parties, gender reveals, or extravagant bachelor or bachelorette parties? How did you feel about that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org.
We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. We're continuing our conversation about people celebrating life events in more and more public ways, from gender reveal parties to promposals. Aaliyah Wong is with us. She's a staff writer for The Atlantic, and her recent piece is called The Over-Celebration of Life Events.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you done one of these or been at one of these, a big party for something that maybe wouldn't have been such a big party not that long ago, the baby gender reveal, milestone birthday for human or pet, engagement, divorce party? Did it go online afterward? Did it go viral? Do you watch these things online, even if you don't participate in person? Do you think we're getting out of hand with this stuff? Or is it all harmless fun? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org.
Aaliyah, we talked about some of the positives to publicly celebrating a lot more life events, but it seems like there's some negatives too. Let's take promposals, for example, and other things that involve young people. It was crazy enough when I was young, you know, asking somebody to prom, and that was usually just between two people with some friends hovering around the edges. What are the possible pitfalls today for promposals?
Yeah, I mean, I think there can be many pitfalls. There has been some reporting on a few promposals that, because of the grandeur and the spectacle nature of it, you know, the pressure placed on usually the girl who was being asked was kind of unfair. Like, what if she didn't want to go, but, you know, there's been this whole promposal that's on film and everyone's watching, it's harder to just say no. So there is a sort of deeper, perhaps more insidious consequence of those kinds of things. It's also just it maybe reinforces some of the traditional gender roles that we see with prom and even with gender reveal parties. I think that has been a concern that many people have raised when talking about these things.
Now, even younger now, you're seeing that many schools are doing graduations from every level of school. I remember when I was a kid, we actually had graduation from eighth grade, and they still do that now. But now you're seeing, you know, graduation from kindergarten. In fact, Caroline on Facebook said, kindergarten and grade school graduation started being a thing at least 20 years ago. These are also unnecessary. Is it possible that if we start celebrating everything, that kids grow up to expect constant affirmations?
I definitely think that is a potential consequence. I do with the graduation ceremonies. That's one that I kind of hesitated about, just because, especially for disadvantaged kids, having that recognition can be really valuable, particularly at that middle school marker, to attach a reward to academic achievement. I think there is value in that. But yeah, if you're giving them a graduation ceremony with every grade, then kind of dilutes the purpose of the the actual capstone graduation. And I do think there is this concern more generally with youth expecting reward more and more for things that should be just an inherent part of their scope of responsibilities or duties.
We had an email from Shar that said that they had a party after paying off their mortgage. It was a huge life event. Now, that sounds like a pretty interesting idea. Have you heard of that?
I have not heard of that, though I've heard of similar versions of that. I've heard of parties for students who finally, or people who finally pay off their student debt. I've heard of parties for people who have a new job. I've somewhat more perversely, I've heard of people having parties when one of their less popular coworkers leaves a job. I've seen cakes for that, which is a little sad. But I think there are these more, I guess, mundane life events that can feel like they're worthy of celebration. And I think that's fine as long as they don't place pressure on attendees to either buy gifts or somehow contribute financially. And I think that is one of the underlying challenges with these parties, particularly when they relate to weddings or births.
Yeah, you know, you bring that up. You bring up the cost, and it's very interesting. We had a few Facebook commenters say that, why is everything a celebration? I feel like it's just people generating more gifts, parties for themselves, and that waters down the importance of actual celebrations. Brandy on Facebook said engagement parties, bachelorette parties, weddings, baby showers, gender reveals, birthdays. One family's parties can make me go broke. And, you know, and what about the financial costs to these public events, not only for the people who are expected to bring gifts, but the people actually putting on the parties?
Totally. I mean, it's expensive all around. I mean, one of the inspirations for the story in the first place was I was invited to a gender reveal party last year. I had never really heard about them. And I was really confused as to whether I needed to bring a gift. And I ended up bringing one, you know, because better to come with something rather than empty-handed. You just don't, these parties are so newfangled that you don't really know what the etiquette is. And I think, especially with destination weddings and then destination bachelor or bachelorette parties, that's another huge financial expectation that a lot of millennials have been complaining about, especially as they grow in popularity. I had a destination wedding to attend last year. I have one this year. And I am, my wallet is not happy, I will tell you that.
We had a listener who emailed to say that they're a sonographer and they do ultrasounds. So they often have patients that become so angry if we can't find the gender because they're having a gender reveal party. It's become ridiculous. Gender isn't even technically part of the study, and we look for so many things like health problems or abnormalities. But the gender party itself is all they can think about.
Wow.
Not the health, the overall health of the baby. What do you think about that?
I could have interviewed that person for the story. She would have been a good source. But yeah, it is. I think gender reveal parties are a particularly pronounced example of the problematic nature of these. I think really this is one where social media has been a driving force. And I interviewed this girl or this woman who is pregnant. She should actually be having her baby soon. And she and her husband, her boyfriend, really, you know, they wanted it to be a surprise. They really liked the idea of not knowing. And then all the pressure started coming in from friends and family because gender reveal parties were a big deal in that community, or they'd become a big deal. So I think that is definitely something that we're going to see start to really reshape the culture around a birth, around babies, around parenting. One sort of glimmer of hope is that it's become such a phenomenon that there's almost this reverse phenomenon in reaction that we're seeing. Like, I heard a story about someone who told her friends that she was having a gender reveal party and invited everyone. And everyone, you know, was so, had so much anticipation, like, is it going to be a boy or a girl? And in this case, they used a t-shirt cannon. You know, it's common to use some sort of apparatus to kind of basically expose the gender. And out of the t-shirt cannon came a yellow t-shirt, and she was like, surprise, I just pranked you all, I just wanted to have a party. And so these sorts of parties are somewhat of a rising trend. And even if you just look online, like the number of listicles just with gender reveal fails or basically sort of satirizing gender reveal parties kind of indicates to me that this is a trend only, and that it will soon start to dissipate as people realize how silly it is.
We have about a minute and a half, but I wanted to quickly go to a call. Let's go to Susie in Portage. Good afternoon, Susie. Welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
Did you have a question or a statement for Allie?
Yeah, I just had a comment that I thought a new trend that I had sort of heard was the push present. And to me, it's disgusting. You know, I mean, to have a healthy and a healthy baby and to have a healthy mom after a pregnancy is a gift every time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the call, Susie.
I'm really glad you brought that up. That was something I thought about a lot in writing this story, because it is very much a related phenomenon. It's and in this case, even more exemplifies the sort of capitalistic aspect of these celebrations. It's just this sense that we need to somehow, through materialism, express how happy we are, rather than just being happy in and of itself.
Aaliyah, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Aaliyah Wong is a staff writer for The Atlantic, covering education and families. She was with us to talk about her recent piece titled The Over-Celebration of Life Events.
Coming up after the news, one big life event may not happen this year. It's up in the air. The ongoing government shutdown could mean a postponement or a replacement of the annual State of the Union address. We'll learn more in a bit. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.
Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. Coming up, from rotary phones to pogs to Snapchat, there are certain things that make up the fabric of a generation that some people are just completely baffled by. Coming up, we'll take your calls at 800-642-1234.
First, President Trump's annual State of the Union address could be in jeopardy because of the ongoing government shutdown. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi sent a letter to the president yesterday advising him to postpone the speech or submit a written address, citing security concerns.
Now, depending on your political beliefs, some applauded the move as a way to push President Trump to move on the shutdown. Others said that this was purely partisan and spiteful. Our next guest is here to talk about the fight over the State of the Union and what it says about our political climate.
Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science and director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. I'm happy to be with you.
So House Speaker Pelosi had invited the president. A date was set. Yesterday, she didn't exactly uninvite him, but said, please consider rescheduling or submitting a written State of the Union, saying, hey, this is a big security deal. A lot of the people providing security would be unpaid. There's not a lot of precedent for this kind of thing, is there?
No, apparently there's no precedent. I was, you know, looking to see what might have happened similar to this in the past. And no, this is just one more unprecedented thing that we've probably talked about over the past 2 years. So, yeah.
And now the president responded this afternoon sort of obliquely, but he sent a letter, or his office sent a letter to the speaker. canceling what was apparently a trip scheduled to start today, using a military aircraft to bring the House Speaker to a few places, including Belgium, Egypt, and then visiting troops in Afghanistan. The president said, well, in light of the shutdown, we should cancel that. Yeah. So what do you make of that response for the White House?
Pretty remarkable, particularly if you read the letter that was sent to her. It reads not exactly like a very long tweet, but, I mean, it's just full of sarcasm. It suggests that perhaps she wants to fly commercial. It makes reference to becoming part of the strong border security movement. It's really interesting. And so I guess what's the funny thing for me is that, not funny, but whatever, the thing for me is that there had been no response from the White House. And so as late as this morning, people were wondering, why hasn't the president responded? Why have we heard nothing from the White House? This is so unlike President Trump. And then this dropped, and then that's the response.
Speaker Pelosi was asked by reporters about her letter. She stuck with her talk about security concerns. Here it is.
We would have the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, the entire Congress of the United States, House and Senate, the Supreme Court, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Cabinet of the United States, did I say that, and the Diplomatic Corps, all in the same room. This is requires hundreds of people working on the logistics and the security of it. Most of those people are either furloughed or victims of the president's shutdown. But that isn't the point. The point is security.
Is there some case to be made that, yeah, if we have all these unpaid or furloughed people in charge of this high-profile event, we should postpone it or do it differently?
Well, she had to walk some of that back just a little because people were criticizing her for suggesting that perhaps people who work in those areas would not be at the top of their game, let's say, because of the furlough and because of not being paid and because of the shutdown and things like that. And so I think that the issue is, I mean, this is a political move, obviously, and I guess I wouldn't say I'm not a security expert, but I don't know that I would say that security would be necessarily an issue.
I've seen some people, political veterans, people who have covered politics for a long time, saying that, you know, if the public delivery of the State of the Union were to stop this year, that wouldn't be such a bad thing. It's just a political speech by the president and doesn't really add that much to our discourse. Is the State of the Union an important thing, Susan?
It's an important ceremonial thing. As far as policymaking and things like that, I would agree that it doesn't offer a whole lot. It allows a president to lay out his agenda for the year. It allows for a ceremonial coming together of all of the branches of government and all of those people that Speaker Pelosi mentioned in the clip that you just played. But as far as a policy tool, not much comes out of State of the Union addresses at this point.
And this is something that the president is required to do in one form or another. Is it in the Constitution? I can't remember. But the president has to give something to Congress. For years and years, it was, you know, they sent over a letter. That was it. But the president does have to give some kind of State of the Union thing, right?
Right. So the president's required by the Constitution to update Congress kind of on the affairs of the country. And historically, these had been much more like end-of-the-year annual reports. And they would be sent over to Congress from the president's office and then read into the record by an official in Congress. And then it wasn't until we get into the 20th century that Woodrow Wilson brought back the idea of giving an address. And then different presidents throughout that period, then you had other presidents who then moved it to radio when that was an option, and then television. And Lyndon Johnson was the first to have one in the evening. So there's been a long history. And so, no, this idea of what we're familiar with as a formal event in the evening on all the networks, that's 50 years old or so.
Talking to Susan Johnson, political scientist at UW-Whitewater, looking at this rift between House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Trump administration over the State of the Union address, whether, how, and when it should happen. Stepping back from this back and forth over the State of the Union address, Susan, this is all, of course, in the context of this government shutdown. Do you see these as basically just back and forth efforts to get a political advantage out of the shutdown?
Well, most of the polling that had been done up until this point has shown that a majority of people believe that the president, the Republicans, are more responsible for the shutdown than the Democrats. I think that Nancy Pelosi, seeing that, was trying to go in for even more of an advantage in sending this letter in regard to the State of the Union address and wanting to draw even more attention to it. But this reflects poorly on both parties. And, I mean, we have to remember that we have a significant number of people who are government employees who some are working without pay and others are not working and are not being paid. And at this point, it's gotten to where we're almost at a month, and we're seeing some real serious ramifications. And I think the more that we see of those, the more likely people are going to have to be to come to the table. At least it's my hope.
Do you see what might look like a trivial or petty rift like this over the State of the Union getting in the way of serious conversation, maybe serious leadership when it comes to ending the shutdown?
Honestly, not really, because this is a case where we have a president who is unwilling to negotiate. And there was an agreement that had been communicated to congressional leadership back in December by Vice President Pence that they would have passed it and would have gone on, and the government would have been funded at least in the short term. And then the president pulled the plug on that. And since then, he's been unwilling to move from what his demand is in $5.7 billion for the wall. So I think he needs to decide that he's willing to come to the table and negotiate. And I just don't know when that's going to be.
Republicans definitely framed some of the 2018 election campaign around Nancy Pelosi as an adversary, the concern that she would become House Speaker. She is House Speaker. Democrats did pretty well, at least on the House side of things in the elections. Do you see her being a leading face for Democrats, leading voice for Democrats, being a positive now for the Democratic Party?
She's a very strong force for the Democratic Party. Coming out of that election in 2018 and then her appointment as speaker, her election as speaker by the Democratic caucus, they want someone who is going to be a strong advocate. And the people on the left of the Democratic Party who were concerned about her not being a strong enough advocate, this is making a lot of them feel better about their decision ultimately to go along and support her for speaker. She's a strong, strong voice. And I don't know that the president was aware that she was going to be such a strong voice and advocate on the Democratic Party side.
Looking ahead with this State of the Union thing, and who knows what's going to change in the couple hours after we talk, much less the next few weeks, Susan, but people have offered different suggestions. Senator Rand Paul saying the president could come on the Senate floor, be invited there to deliver the address. People have suggested he do it from the U.S.-Mexico border to make a point about why he's sticking by this shutdown. Do you see, I guess, alternative venues happening here?
Potentially. I mean, it's traditionally been in the, as we know, a joint session that meets in the House chamber for space reasons, I'm assuming. But the constitutional responsibility is that he provide Congress with an update on the what's going on in the country, and he can do that in whatever form he would want to, I suppose.
There have been concerns, as we wrap up, Susan, concerns about the public losing respect, losing faith in the workings of American government. Does a sequence of events like the last couple days, you think, reinforce some of that?
I think there's a sequence of events that we've seen going on for longer than just the last few days that I think helps feed this. What's going on right now doesn't help that.
Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science and director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. She joined us today to talk about Speaker Nancy Pelosi advising President Trump to postpone the 2019 State of the Union address in light of the ongoing government shutdown. Now, we want to hear from you. A few weeks ago on Central Time, we got some interesting comments from you all about what you remember from your life before the internet. We wanted to spin off from that conversation in light of a topic that's been trending online. The question, what's one thing that young people today wouldn't understand from your youth or your generation?
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's something that stuck with you that people today might not understand? Is there a technology or social habit that was common then and alien today? If you're younger, what do you think someone from an older generation might not get? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us a tweet at Central Time WPR.
And another part of the inspiration for this conversation is videos of teenagers today being baffled by technology from yesteryear.
Wait, so wait, look, that's zero, so that's one ahead. What if you went just...
You guys have made this all worth it.
Yeah. Everyone has struggled like you guys.
Yeah, everybody yes. has.
I think of different.
Wait a minute.
Think of different.
We have to pick up the phone and then do it?
Put the phone to your ear. What do you hear? What does that sound like? Okay, that's a start.
All right, watch out, watch out.
Incorrect. Correct for a zero.
What does zero sound like? What does zero sound like?
So that's the sound of two 17-year-olds getting laughed at by not knowing how to use a rotary phone. Why would they? Truth be told, that would baffle some of our producers today, some of whom are in their 30s and younger. Let's go to your calls now. We've got Jay in Two Rivers. Jay, hi.
Good afternoon.
What's your example, Jay? What did you do in your youth that maybe people wouldn't do today?
Well, years ago, after one had acquired a girlfriend, a car, a good stereo system was usually the next thing that was important to quite a few people. And we would sit sometimes for hours and put one album on after the next and just enjoy each other's company, critically listening to the music for its own sake. And now it seems that most people listen to music a lot, but it's always ancillary. It's in the background, not really being enjoyed for its own sake.
And it's solitary too, Jay. I think more and more it's on the headphones or earbuds. It's not that community experience, right?
Oh, right. We would get a room full of people and uh-huh. all mutually enjoy. The better sounding the system, the more we seem to enjoy it.
Jay.
Besides the visiting and interchange that went on.
Sure. Jay, thank you so much for getting us started at 800-642-1234.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to John in Brown Deer. Good afternoon, John. Welcome to Central Time. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for fielding my comment or question.
Oh, not a problem.
I don't know if any students or maybe just a few would understand how to perform the multiplication, division, and doing the cosines and sines and so forth of angles at doing it on a manual slide rule.
Yes. And in fact, thank you so much for the call, John. In fact, Larry Mueller, host of the Larry Mueller Show, said I used to use the slide rule a lot in school. Don't think you see them anymore. You really don't.
Yeah, thanks a lot, John. You and Larry Mueller on the same page there. Yeah, we asked around here and heard a lot from people. AOL Instant Messenger was big for Rachel Vasquez and J. Carlisle Larson, both producers on this show. Those are ones that they remember, and they had that kind of narrow window. And let's see. Oh, this was a good one. WPR's regional northern manager up in Superior, Paul Damberg, says back in the early 90s, he was the first staff member at the radio station to move to a Windows operating system and have access to the World Wide Web. And he once let a sink overflow while educating his boss on how to use this new wacky interweb thing. Let's go back to your calls now. Angelo is with us in New Hartford, Minnesota. Angelo, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's your example?
I guess I'd have to say a recent trip this last week to Madison from where I live in Minnesota. use of road maps. It seems like everything from your phone to your vehicle has navigation systems now, and I wouldn't know if much younger generations would know how to use a road map.
Angelo, thanks. That's one we heard a lot when we talked about the pre-internet age. Do you ever pull out a paper map for anything, Darrell?
I haven't pulled out a paper map in years. I really haven't. I must confess. I used to.
I don't much had anymore
like
either.
A city map and had a state map, but since navigation, either on your phone or in your car, haven't had much use for it.
One holdover from me, a lot of people will let the map float, you know, so whatever your direction you're going is the one facing up. I can't do that. North is up.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't know where I am.
Yep, exactly.
We are asking for your examples of technologies that you or social customs, whatever, that you grew up with that other generations, maybe younger generations, don't get. Vice versa, if you're younger yourself, what's something that you get that the older folks don't? 800-642-1234 is the number to call.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Chris in Madison. Good afternoon, Chris. Welcome to Central Time.
Hi. So I grew up in Chicago, and one of our favorite things to do when we were kids in the summertime, because we were always outside, was to play flashlight tag. And the kids would run around and play hide-and-go-seek, basically running around in people's yards, hiding in their bushes, hiding on their back porches. And one kid would have a flashlight and run around after them and try to tag them. And I just think today, if you had all kinds of kids, teenagers, whatever, running around in people's yards, hiding on their porches, shining flashlights around people's backyards, you'd have the police there. Somebody would be shot. I mean, I think it's just not that free for kids to just be out and about and around neighbors and neighborhoods.
Chris, thank you so much for the call. You know, I remember those days of playing tag, whether it was freeze tag or regular tag or even flashlight tag, and running around and hiding under people's porches, hiding in their backyards. And you really, she's right. Chris is right. You can't do that anymore.
I do remember, yeah, everybody's like the whole contiguous group of yards. It was all one unit. You didn't care where the lines were
right.
When you were kids. Yeah, back and forth. Thanks so much for that. Steve joins us now in Partyville. Steve, hi.
Hello there.
What do you got for us, Steve?
My recollection is if you lived on a farm and you had a party line, you listened to everything that happened up and down the road that you were on. And so you kind of were able to keep the neighborhoods in touch whether you were there or not.
Steve, thanks a lot. Yeah, those party line. This is a little pre-me, or maybe I wasn't in the right place. I did not have the party line phone.
I did not either. I had a friend that had a party line
phone,
which was, you know, that was, we always thought that was reserved for rich people to get the party line or get when call waiting came out, like, wow, you have call waiting.
Oh, you mean intentionally you bring on multiple people?
Yeah. No, the party line, yeah, you could bring on multiple people at the same time.
Oh, but Steve's was, you had no choice. Like, you had one line, and all you and all your neighbors had the same line, right? This is old school.
Oh, okay. This is really,
so
really old school.
You pick up the phone, and Mabel's talking to the vet.
Oh, wow.
The veterinarian,
okay.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Steve.
That's straight out of Andy Griffith. Sarah?
Right.
Can you give me Mount Pilot?
Right. Yeah. Turn the crank. Let's go to Mitch now in Manitowoc. Mitch, hi.
Hi. I guess I wanted to talk about Three in the Tree.
Three in the Tree, that's a car thing I remember. It's a little before my time, I think. Tell us about it.
So it was a car. The car had a clutch, and instead of shifting down on the right-hand side, you shifted with the gear column.
Oh.
So you had three gears and a reverse up there. So you had first, second, third, and then up to reverse.
All right. Well, do you think that was better or worse than having, like, four on the floor, Mitch?
Again?
Was that better or worse than having four on the floor, the three on the tree?
Well, it was just different because most people weren't used to it. But otherwise, they'd shift the same. You just have to know where the gears are to find it.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thanks to everybody who called in. You can keep this going. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know a technology, a custom that was there in your generation isn't anymore. Here's one, Jason Butler. Who works here. He says, it's baffling to recall that when I was a kid, people smoked cigarettes everywhere, restaurants, planes, the gym, in classrooms, a big culture change. That reminds me, I was in the hospital once when I was in high school, and I got moved into the pediatric ward because my roommate, who was there for some kind of treatment, kept smoking in my hospital room. Yeah, that's something I don't think you'd see today.
No, it would never happen today. But yeah, I mean, planes and hospitals, you'd be able to smoke. It's crazy.
A smoking car on Amtrak. That was not the place to be because everybody came back and smoked on that.
Right.
A lot of great examples. Thank you so much. Email ideas at WPR.org if you have more, or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about New Year's resolutions, and today I saw that it is the National Ditch New Year's Resolution Day. So, Rob, I know you said that you had more guidelines and resolutions. Are you ditching those today since it's National Ditch Resolution Day?
Well, I love that, there's the official day now that we just say, okay, I'm giving up halfway through January. No, so I don't, like I said, I don't make full-on resolutions, but I have done, like I think I said, I learned how to use our office phones in the voicemail.
Yes.
I haven't forgotten that.
Right.
So I can't ditch that. And actually one, I kept this on the down low, but I started using one of those online language apps and I started doing the Spanish one. I don't know any Spanish. I'm like, okay. And I'm not going to say, I'm not even going to claim I'm learning Spanish. Because if I make a grandiose claim like that,
and somebody's
going to
give
up
on it. They're going to call you on it.
Or try to speak to me in Spanish right. With hilarious results. But I've got like a 37-day streak now. Going back into December, I've stuck with it so far. I'm not going to use this opportunity to ditch out. And you're not a resolution guy. We talked about that.
No. But I'll keep my promise of not playing the pool for the NCAA tournament.
Okay, that's good. Or you could ditch your resolution to not make resolutions and make one today.
I could do that, but I probably won't.
You're not going to do that. I won't put you on the spot for anything. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.